Shakespeare once said all the world's a stage, but he didn't tell us how to get there. This is Steps to the Stage, a 7th Street Theater podcast. I'm your host, Colin Pinedo, and let's get the show going.
Thank you, places!
Folks at home, do you have a business, small or otherwise, that isn't pulling in traffic the way you want it to? Well, it might be because they don't have something to remember you by. And that's why today, we are sponsored by Graphic Details, Inc., Signs and Displays. They will print out your banners, they'll cut vinyl, they'll do window graphics for the company cars. We're talking business cards, banner stands, LCD displays, tabletop displays, logos, all in full living color. Again, that is Graphic Details, Inc. here in Chino, California. Thank you so much.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Steps to the Stage, a 7th Street Theater podcast talking about the ins and outs of what it takes to go into the production of a play with the help of the community theater professionals you know and love. We're talking about forming a production team, and I have a very special guest sitting across the table from me. He has done so much for our little theater here, to the point of being its creator. I am very excited to be able to talk to him today and pick apart his brain a little bit. Talking to us about a production team, it is Mr. Paul Larson. Paul, welcome back.
What? It's great to be back, and thank you very much.
The point of this podcast is telling the theater process and stuff like that to people who might not necessarily know about it to a certain extent. So please tell us, what does a production team do and why does a show need a production team?
That's a very good question because so many times people will say, I think we really need to do a show. Mm-hmm. We need to do a show. So you find someone that says, I'll direct the show. I've got a great idea for the show. And then they get to the spot where they say, well, I really don't know how to build a set, or I don't know much about sound. I know what I want the show to look like, and I want the, and then they realize that shows can't be done alone.
Yeah.
So the whole point is to figure out what the production team is going to be. And when we talk about it, you need to have someone that can manage, which is what the role of someone up in the office might be. Mm-hmm. You need to have someone that can design. And on multiple levels, you need to have someone who can create not just the actors, but also the set, the lights, the sound. And then you need to be able to pull this whole thing together and have the gestalt of a beautiful production on stage.
Yeah. You mentioned all these different aspects of like the different positions that are needed.
Yes.
Okay. So when you're putting the team together, what do you look for in a person that would let them know they would be a good fit for the team?
Well, one of the things that I found over time, because when I got involved with this at the very beginning, I knew nothing about nothing. Yeah. I had done some shows in high school and shows in college, but the intricacies that needed to be accomplished, I was unfamiliar with. And I had built some sets and I had done some lights and things like that, but putting it all together was exciting. So what you need to look for is someone that you have confidence in, whether they have confidence in themselves or not, doesn't much matter.
Yeah.
And someone who is willing to share their vision and see how well it aligns with what you as a director have in mind.
Interesting. Could you share some experiences that you have had? Because you've directed many a show here at this theater. Can you share some experiences you've had with production teams that you've worked with in the past? And how they have helped improve the show overall?
I can share one story in particular that explains what a person, what can happen to a person over time. We had a wonderful young man, Anthony Young Garner, that was in Annie back, I believe it was 1993. I didn't even direct the show, but I was working on the show, and his mother ended up showing up and keeping an eye on things. Did nothing else. The next show she did snacks. Refreshments. The next show she got involved backstage. The next show she got involved in another aspect. And by the time we got further along, she was my co-director for what we used to do then is called Rookie Theater. And she would have said, and I think if you listen to Rosalind right now, she says, I had no idea what I was in for, but she did an absolutely marvelous job. She took a cast of over 50 kids and put together a wonderful production of Robin Hood back in 1995 or so. It was amazing. So what you look for are the people that are going to support what your vision is and have the faith. So that's the main part right now. Okay.
You mentioned Rookie Theater earlier. Could you go more in depth on that?
Oh, we were at a point at the very beginning, back in the 80s, in the early 80s, mm-hmm. We were able to cast everybody that showed up. Mm-hmm. It was wonderful. We, mm-hmm. you know, we'd get, for the very first show, we did You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, and we had a dozen kids that showed up to audition. Mm-hmm. And we said, what role would you like to play? And say, well, I'd like to be Charlie Brown, and I'd like to be Schroeder, and I'd like to be Schroeder too. Mm-hmm. So we had kids playing multiple roles, and some shows they'd sit out and another. Mm-hmm. And that went fine up until, I guess it was about 1989. Mm-hmm. And we weren't doing the shows here at the 7th Street Theater.
Yeah, you were.
We were in schools, usually at Walnut Elementary or Newman Elementary. And we even did one show out in South Ontario at Levi Dickey Elementary. Really? Anyhow, the point on this one is we had 209 kids show up to audition for Jungle Book. And we at that time said, well, we realize now that we're not going to be able to cast everybody in a show. And that's when the idea of having classes started up. And we thought, well, we still want them to get in a production. And we decided we'd try rookie productions. And we'd usually, once we got into this building, we did a rookie production once a year for about 4 or 5 years, I guess it was.
Yeah. That's actually really interesting that in the very beginning, there you used to have kids, multiple kids playing the same role, which is really similar to what we're doing this weekend with Outsiders. That's with all the different, with the showcase and everything.
I was so excited to see that the showcase was able to come around after everything you guys have been through this last year. Oh my goodness.
We have technically been a part of the show for over a year now, which is crazy to think about.
If only it had been a tour.
Oh, one can only dream.
Picture this for me. Warm food, right? People chitting and chatting all around you like it's a big family. You know, take a whiff in. Breathe it in deep. What do you smell? What is that? What is it? Tomato? Ooh. A little bit of garlic? Yeah. Perhaps a bit of the mozzarella cheese? Oh, you know it. Open your eyes. Where were you? That's right. Canateros. Dine under the vine with a hand-tossed pizza made the old-fashioned way. You know what I mean? None of that deep-fried gunk like at those national chains. No. If you want good quality, family-made Italian food, go to Canateros. Trust me.
Yeah. So what else have you learned from directing and being a part of production teams?
Well, as a director and being a part of a team, one of the things that those that are interested in becoming a director is that you can have the idea up front, but as soon as you begin to build your team, a sit down around a table is very important to have the read through with that group so that they understand costumes and what you have in mind and what the costumer has in mind. And sometimes there's a little bit of a give and take, or you might see the same thing, or you might see completely different things.
Yeah.
And the same thing with, I always like to have an assistant director or co-director. Mm-hmm. I always like working with a new person. And surprisingly, one of the people that I got involved with very early was Donna Rice.
Mm.
She was a friend outside of the theater. And I said, I think you would be wonderful down at the theater. Mm-hmm. I'd love to have you work with me on some shows. And she got hooked. And it's been, and I've teamed with her on, I would say 4 or 5 shows that we've worked together on, either as co-directors or as assistant director and director. I think collaboration is a major key. So going on also with the musical directors, because musical directors have a unique skill. And I've worked with people that have not been necessarily theater oriented that have also been my musical directors. So it's been fun to say, and I love the musical things that you're doing. Let's see what we can do online. I remember working back in the early 2000s, we did the play The Nightingale, the musical version of The Nightingale with my friend Stan Berger and I wrote. I had done a straight version of it back in like 88 or 89. And then we had some incidental music in it. And I said, Stan, we need to sit down. Anyhow, we brought in a musical director that was a music teacher at one of the local schools, and she was fabulous. She did such a great job, and she would have never thought of doing it. See, that's part of it, is offering opportunities to people that may not have done it yet. Mm-hmm. So I think opening doors is a very important part.
Yes. That's
enabling in the best sense of the word.
Absolutely. That has been the story that has been told almost every episode of this podcast by all the guests we've had, is people who didn't think this was for them and weren't expecting to fall in love with it so much and keep coming back. And so it's really wonderful that we are able to have this space and give these experiences to people.
That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you're hearing that, Colin.
Yeah. You mentioned this very briefly. Could you elaborate more on the life cycle of a production team, from the start of the creation of the show all the way through to essentially opening night?
Exactly. It's a very broad spectrum on that. So the key things is talking to people.
Yes.
Say, I have an idea and I wanted to share this with you, and I'd like you to be a part of the vision. And if people are reluctant, I always like to ask why and say, the reason I ask you is because I think you would be wonderful.
Yeah.
And then to bring together the team, sometimes the people really do not know each other. So getting them together around the table or around the family room, sitting comfortably and reading and talking, and say, you read the play on your own. What did you see? And, people getting red and being embarrassed and saying, is it okay?
Yeah.
And so, that's the whole point, have a chance to share a little bit here. And so knowing that their voice is important is, as a director, the people that you put around you need to know that you value what they say. Mm. And so once you do the read through and after you hear from everyone around, now that they've read the story, what was your sight? And say, that is amazing, because this is what I had in mind. And 90% of the time, it's very similar. And for the 10% it's not, someone may have had a better idea than I had. And I'd say, I would really like to see that incorporated in the show, especially in costumes, which is not my strong suit, and makeup. I am so glad that people are talented in those areas. So once you get the team together, then setting goals along the way are very important. And as a director, I always, always build my productions backward. I begin the calendar by looking at what the production dates are. I make sure that we have two final dress rehearsals blocked in always.
Yes.
And then I make sure that we always have full runs for a couple of days. And I make sure that we get a chance to run a full act. So that you can stop and go and get it clean. And then you're looking back, you're a week away from opening night, 2 weeks away, 3 weeks away, sometimes 4 weeks away. And you're still at the point where you're just finishing up blocking, taking a look at it.
Yeah.
So the trust that you have in your actors is knowing their lines and understanding that they're responsible for the people around them on stage. Along with that, when you're working with your choreographers, it's so cool now that we have, or since we've had this beautiful facility here at 7th Street, to know that your choreographer can be working in the green room while you're working on the stage, and the musical director can be working in the girls' dressing room and bringing together all the pieces one at a time, and the kids can work on the music and then go in and work with a choreographer, and then we could see how it blocks out on the stage. So the collaboration that way is very, very important.
I've lived lots of different experiences. And we all have of.
Yeah, well, you've been in the midst of many of those.
All sorts of things going on in this building all at once.
It is. It's amazing.
It's fantastic to be able to just walk through the hall and see all these different things going on. It's really cool.
It is.
This episode is, I think, kind of special because we're not just talking to someone who has been a director multiple times, someone who's been a part of a production team multiple times, but you started this theater company. And I think it would be really good just for, the sake of the show, for you to talk about how that sort of came about as well.
It's a funny story, actually.
Oh, is it?
I started teaching back in 1976, and my partner in teaching happened to be the accompanist when I did You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown at Laverne College back in like 1972. And we did the show on campus, and we also edited the show down to, I hope we're not going to get in trouble for this, but we edited it to a 45-minute show, and we put all the set pieces in the back end of two pickup trucks, and we drove all over the Inland Empire performing. I think we performed like 36 times over a month. I mean, it took us 2 weeks to learn the show was our goal. And then we traveled. It was crazy fun. But during that time, I met the accompanist, Dina Carper, who's amazing. She's Dina Adams now. And lo and behold, when I got this job, she was my next door neighbor when I started teaching. She was a fifth grade teacher. I taught sixth grade. The following year, she said, Paul, we're doing, I really found this great musical. And I would love for you to direct it. I'd like to do the music. And Rochelle Young, who was a dancer and a kindergarten teacher, choreographed it. And I said, I would love to do that. So we met with our parents, got through it. Well, we ended up doing that show, and it was absolutely fabulous. We had fifth and sixth grade kids in it, did it with her class in mind for the kids that could participate. It was a big hit. No one had done anything like that for a while on the campus, apparently. And I end up resurrecting it back in 83 or 84 after she had left the campus. And I brought in another musical director and another choreographer. And we did it school-wide, like second to sixth grade. And it worked out really well. So that's the backstory. The front story on it is my son, Jeff, who was playing sports and, you know, doing Little League and all that kind of stuff. He said, Dad, I'd really like to take an acting class. So Karen and I looked things up. And along with doing that kind of stuff for school, I was also running after school sports programs and doing basketball and track and football and things like that. So I said, I'll call up Pat McCardle at the city. He might know about it. So they had a class going on, and Jeff went to the class. We finished up the production of the 1890 Music Hall Review, and we went to their eight-week recital after their class. Well, Colin, at the end of 8 weeks, whoever had instructed the class had the kids up lip-syncing to The Sound of Music. They weren't even singing the song. And I leaned over to Karen, and I said, Karen, this is terrible. I can do better than this. Go talk to Pat. So I went down and talked to Pat, and he said, you know, we've been struggling with our theater program. He says, why don't you do some? I said, you know, I don't have that much experience. He says, okay, why don't we do it as a class? We'll do it as a, like a workshop. And so we started with that, and I ended up calling in a friend who played all the music. She couldn't do it live, so we recorded the entire score of You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, and had it on a an old Wallensack reel-to-reel. And we did the show over at the community building and put blue butcher paper up on the back wall to cover up the cows that were painted up there. And built the set out on the front lawn. The kids came over to my house and were painting it. So I had paint stains on the front lawn and trying to figure out how to make a doghouse that wouldn't collapse. And we had multiple rows, of course. And the kids had a ball, and we had people show up. As a matter of fact, I don't know if one of the productions, I know we had 125 people in the audience. Yeah, well, that's what I said. And one of my friends, it was the mayor of the city at that time, was Fred Aguirre, and Patty Aguirre ended up hearing about it. So that's how it started. And they said, well, would you guys like to do another show? And I said, okay, but I'm not going to direct. I don't, I want to make sure this is a community theater. I don't want it to be one that, that I'm doing, that Karen and I, my wife Karen and I are doing alone. So we ended up doing the Phantom Toll Booth after that. And my son, by the way, wasn't even in that first show. No, he's a little too young at that time. But we did the Phantom Toll Booth at the community building. And that went pretty well. And then after that, we did Cinderella and we did Alice and a lot of the classics, the Disney shows that were very popular, and people showed up and had a grand time. Along with that, two theaters in Claremont for grown-ups had closed, and I was in the last production of one of them. And they heard about the children's theater show, and a couple of people came down and saw it. And they said, do you think Chino would like to have an adult community theater too? I'll go ask.
Yeah.
And that fall, see, children's theater started in August. And that November, the adult theater started. So right after children's theater, the community theater started. Nice. So that's where it all began.
Yeah.
And from that point, it just, we had so many wonderful people. And there was a wonderful article in the newspaper today about the Bernie Awards and the Founder Awards. And we've been trying to acknowledge the people that were here along with Karen and me, the Gallegoses and the McGlassons and Don and Linda Cronkright, all these people that without them, it never would have happened. So hopefully that touched the basis of what you were looking
for. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I think, it's important for us to figure out how we got here.
And and absolutely. We're not all experts coming in, but we learned what we need to look at you. I mean, this is the exciting part. Learning new things and making it your own.
Exactly. That's been the lesson that I think we've been teaching ourselves throughout the creation of this podcast, is picking things up that we didn't really have the skills built in for.
Right.
So being able to pick ourselves up.
Experiential learning,
yes. We call it. Awesome. Well, Paul, thank you for your time today.
Well, thank you Colin. This was absolutely wonderful.
This was fantastic. Any last words of wisdom for the people listening?
It's so wonderful to be a part of the family at the 7th Street Theater. Thank you very much.
Thank you all.
In today's day and age, it's more important than ever to remain informed and present in your community, which is why today we would like to highlight the Chino Champion local newspaper. Make sure you keep up with all of Chino's great local events like festivals, meetups, and live performances, virtual or otherwise. The Chino Champion. Thanks for tuning in. Please, subscribe to Steps to the Stage on your favorite podcast platform, and don't forget to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, all that good stuff. And scene.